Hey there, folks. It's the frequency from beyond space and time, at the same time, every time. You're listening to Mad Tower Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Mad Tower Radio. This is episode 54. My name is Dan, as always, joined by my co-hosts, Christian and Ryan. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good, sir. Doing good.
More like, how are you doing? You got a new house, huh?
Yeah, I moved again. Shocker. One day I'll be able to live somewhere consecutively. But yeah, you know, I just moved like fucking two towns over. You know, just admin shit of life. It'll be cooler when I like own a house, but nah. But yeah, it's been a while. You know, I've been moving. Now that we have the time, what we like to do on this show, if this is your first time listening, we like to talk about the strange, the unexplained, ghosts, ghouls, cryptids, conspiracies, things that go bump in the night, weird science, weird history, pretty much anything a little spooky and a little out there, you know. Damn, y'all just left me hanging.
I just wanted to make sure you still knew how to drive this train.
Let me just ease right back into the fucking, into the conductor's seat here, you know. So, I talked about it before. Missing 411. We reviewed a documentary called Missing 411 The Hunted, and it was really cool. It detailed these hunters that seemed to vanish without a trace. And this documentary is available for free on YouTube, so I highly recommend it to everyone out there. It's the scariest documentary you'll probably watch.
Yeah, it did a really good job of dissolving that safety you feel from like watching a documentary. You're like, oh, I'm not like in these events. Yeah. I'm not there with
these
them.
Aren't historical events or anything. Like, it's happening now.
These horrifying sound clips that just like gripped me for weeks later.
Aww.
It was so good.
Yeah, it's also one of the few documentaries out there that will pose these crazy fucking things and then actually make good, solid attempts to back it up with evidence, you know. There are a few pieces of evidence, I don't know what else you'd call it, in that documentary that are, like, unexplained or support his theory. And that theory being that something is happening to these people who go out into the woods who seem to vanish without a trace, you know? And I'm not talking like they find the body a few months later, a few weeks later. This is like people who have who were never seen again. Even to this day, people are still searching for them and still not finding anything. Ryan, I know you weren't on the show yet when we did Missing 411 last time. Are you familiar with it at all?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I listened to this podcast, and I also watch his YouTube videos. His name's Mr. Ballin. I think I've brought him up a couple times previously. Okay. And he actually covers some of the more more prominent, like some of like the bigger cases regarding Missing 411. So that's where I had originally heard it from. And then prior to you bringing me on as like a permanent co-host, that's where I heard it. And then I heard it again with you guys. And I was like, oh, yeah. It freaks me out. It's really scary. Like, that stuff is, like, because, like, people have tried to explain it away, like, oh, there's cave systems. Like, that explains it. Okay, well, yeah, who's going into cave systems willingly?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The caves, like, the caves conspiracy fucks me up, you know, is that this could all point back to caves.
Like Mammoth Cave.
Yeah, the boulder fields fucks me up, that this could all lead back to, like, boulder fields being a profile point. That's always whack. Yep. If this is your first time hearing about Missing 411, you know, the guy who organizes it, David Politis, he talks about these profile points. It's these weird factors that kind of come together to make it a Missing 411 case, like canines won't be able to find the scent of this person. An unexplained weather event happens right before or right during their disappearance, you know. They'll find their belongings scattered all over the place, but they'll never find them. And when I say all over the place, I don't mean just thrown about. I mean, they'll find his shoes 3 miles away from his shirt.
Yeah.
You know, and in some of these cases, they do end up finding the person, you know, but they're dead. I don't think there's been a missing 411 where they find them alive, but they'll find the body in an area that they had already tagged and searched.
Yeah.
You know, like just all sorts of weird, weird, weird profile points that come together and kind of make this more than a missing persons case. And they just rolled out a new documentary. This one is Missing 411, The UFO Connection.
Oh, baby. Yes. This is like when a director you like releases a new film. And you're like, oh, hell yeah, now it's aliens?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this one's nuts. I still think that The Hunted was better overall. But The UFO Connection, you know, it kind of gets out there. I'd say this one is the least grounded in reality, but it's still got that very serious tone that The Hunted did, you know. I don't know. David Politis, he's the kind of guy, I can tell he's not a grifter. Like, I'm not saying I, you know, blindly love and trust this guy, but, like, I don't think he's out here to just make some money off this, you know. Like, he's pretty passionate about it.
There's the kind of person who believes it and is, like, genuine about it for, like, passion reasons, and then there's, like, people who are genuine about it and believe it for psycho reasons. Do you think this is the good kind of passion?
I think this is the good kind of passion.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I just think it's such a huge phenomenon, and he presents, like, really good information. His documentaries are spot on with the info. I'm never left confused, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, he's just a really fucking good investigator, you know.
So is this a series of abduction stories?
Yeah, it's a lot like the last one, where it's just a series of series of weird disappearances that he talks about, and then also he also takes a little bit more time away from the disappearances to talk more theory, or he actually interviews an abductee who has, like, very, very vivid memories of the abduction, like, down to the alien's name and the conversation they had.
Okay.
Yeah, there's less just, let's focus on the missing people, and more, like, as the title says, the UFO connection. Without further ado, let me get into the first disappearance, right? I just wanted to cover a disappearance, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the documentary afterwards, but in no way, shape, or form should you take this podcast segment as a stand-in for the movie. Highly recommend that everyone listening goes and checks it out themselves. You can rent it on YouTube for $5. And this is a man I'd happily give money to, because I want to see him make more.
So what is the UFO connection?
Okay, so I want to talk about a man, Ray Salmon. Okay, now Ray Salmon was from Vancouver, British Columbia, from the Canada. Avid outdoorsman, but, you know, it's Missing 411, I didn't need to tell you that, right? He's a cornerstone of the community, of the outdoor community in his area. You know, everybody loves this guy, everybody knows this guy, everybody's hunted with this guy. He sets out for Harrison Lake on a Friday after work, and drives out to the mountains. This isn't too far from the city, but he's been up there a fuck ton. And he goes up there with his truck, and he's got a camper being towed. He's got a small boat in the bed of his truck. He's got his two dogs with him, and he's got rifles. So, like, he's loaded up for a pretty fucking good week of camping, you know. His buddy, who they were interviewing, who lived near the lake, he was like, hey man, I'm gonna come pick you up in the boat on Monday. This is what Ray said to him. He's like, I'll come pick you up in the boat on Monday. We'll ride up and down the coast looking for old gold mines.
Hmm?
Yeah, yeah. And while he's doing some work on Sunday, he just hears three gunshots from the woods. And not long after that, search and rescue team was called in, you know, because he was supposed to be back. Nobody's finding him. And Here's the weird part, right? They find his truck, they find his camper, they find his boat. It's all there, like he had just set up shop. But the trailer is locked, or the camper is locked, and the truck is locked, and the dogs are in the truck. His wife says it's fucking wild that he didn't have the dogs with him. One of the search and rescue team members, he said it was really confusing to him that when the search began, before they even started the search, that Canada's emergency response team was showing up to do the search with them. And when I first initially heard this, I was like, emergency response team? That sounds pretty standard. But I then learned that the emergency response team is Canada's version of, like, the SWAT team.
Oh.
Yeah, so...
All right.
They
all
sent
right.
out,
they
like...
Needed, so they needed ordnance.
They sent out, like, some Rainbow Six operators with this search and rescue team. And, you know, the reason for that, they think, is that one of the Royal, or RCMP, the Canadian Mounties, one of the RCMP officers said to the search and rescue guys, he was like, you know, we received a tip right before this all started that some teens were driving their car around in the park, and somebody just started taking pot shots at their car, shooting their headlights out.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, and, you know, David kind of... was just kind of thinking out loud, and he says, you know, to me, if he's hurt high up on a ridge somewhere, maybe he's trying to get someone's attention, you know, or something, and
throw out some warning shots or something.
Yeah,
or some signal shots,
sure, anything, right? You know, but like, it just, everybody agrees that it doesn't fucking make sense that he would just start shooting at a car. You know, like, this guy is an avid hunter, avid shooter. David said the same conjecture to his wife, and his wife was like, I think he would have just shot 3 times in the air. I think that's all he would have done.
He wouldn't have put people's lives at danger.
Yeah, yeah, he wouldn't, but, you know, I don't know how good of a shot this guy was. Maybe he was fucking, maybe he knew he was that good, and he was like, I'll just shoot out their headlights.
I mean, if you shoot straight up in the air, is it just like a really crazy coincidence that maybe the trajectory down,
you know, hit a car's lights? That's also something I didn't consider. Maybe he just shot, you know, directly up and the stars aligned that those shots came down on their car.
Yeah, but it's at headlights.
Right, like, right, right.
Like multiple. It's like that would be multiple stars aligning.
True. They never showed us the ballistics, you know, so I don't know how exactly.
If they showed me that, I could tell them, because I know those things.
That's true, man. So then they're getting a little further into the search, right? And search and rescue officer reports that on the second day that their air support spotted some of Ray's clothes and his rifle on the beach, right on the beach, right? But his boat, you know, his boat was back at the camper. His life jacket was out at the camp, was back at the camper. So he just walked down the beach, apparently. Right? And so there's this big patch of woods between the people on the ground and where air support spotted the clothes. And so before they, you know, jump into the woods, basically the Mounties and the ERT said, stay here. And they went all the way out to where Ray's clothes and rifle were, and they brought it back, and then they told the search and rescue team not to go in that area. Said it's unsearchable.
Unsearchable?
Yeah. Yeah. So, what the fuck?
This has given me, like, end of authority vibes,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's given me, like, some fucking blacked out ink on a document kind of shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Southern Reach trilogy type.
Yeah. Fucking crazy. So
like some Roswell shit.
Yeah. But it gets weirder, because then this lake is right at the base of a mountain, right? Lake Harrison. And they then find his pistol up the mountain a couple hundred feet. You know, a couple hundred feet up the base of the mountain. And every they're like, how would he lose his pistol up here, his rifle and clothes down here, you know? And everybody that knows him seems convinced that he's not the guy who would just drop a pistol and not notice.
Something's not adding up.
No, none of it. None of it adds up. His stuff is found scattered around the area of a mountain. Dogs aren't finding any scent at all. And it's at this point that the Mounties and the ERT just kind of start being like, well, he drowned, so that's that. Just kind of being like, okay, yeah, we're done here. He drowned. He's dead. Sorry.
Book it up.
So his wife, Daniela, she goes and she hires a private undersea excavation crew or a search crew to help sweep the bottom of the lake, right? They didn't find a goddamn thing. They didn't find a single thing. Daniela did not receive his backpack back from the RCMP. And during this section of the documentary, David keeps cutting back and forth to this interview he has with a retired Royal Canadian Mounted Police member, right?
Yeah.
And so this part just cracked me up so fucking much that I had to include it. So David Politis, who was also a former detective, by the way, is like, so would there be any reason for the RCMP to lie or withhold information from the victims' families? And this girl, she's just like, no, nope. And he's like, no, not at all. And she's like, no, not in any situation, no. And then he hard cuts to like an aerial drone footage view of like Lake Harrison, right? And comes in with the voiceover and he's like, it became blatantly obvious to me that the RCMP was withholding information about this. And I was just like, fuck. But she did, she did add, in my notes there, I just have mentioned when the RCMP gets owned. She did say, though, that the RCMP does take into account like UFO reports, and they take it pretty seriously, and they send it up to a chain, and she said that they don't really even know where it goes, you know. But David Politis did some digging and found that in the 1960s there was an RCMP report from a Native Canadian tribe at Harrison Lake that saw what could only be described as a UFO in that area. And then Daniela further goes on to tell a story about when her and Ray were camping at the same place, and they were just chilling on the beach looking at the forest across the lake, and they see what looks like headlights driving around back there through the woods. And you know, Ray immediately was like, nah, there couldn't be anyone driving back there. There's no logging going on back there. Like, that's just the woods. And when he mentioned that, he said that the light started to pretty much move more erratically. And, yeah, all sorts of weird shit. That's pretty much the disappearance, you know. I did one of the tame ones, but I thought this one was fucking wacky. Just because of the, like, you know, the Men in Black angle. When, like, the ERT and the RCMP show up and they with guns and shit, you know.
For my own visualization, right? So you're talking about this lake that has frequently seen strange occurrences, and it's at the base of a mountain. Is this in British Columbia? Is it like near the Pacific coast?
Yeah, it's right near Vancouver.
Okay. There's something personally to me real fucking scary about like a big lake and like surrounded by a forest.
Oh yeah, for sure. That like, that's definitely like a cursed location.
You were trying to like take it through this like bureaucratic, like, yeah, Men in Black angle. That is pretty nifty that like you can't even trust a damn Canadian bureaucrat.
Yeah, right. No, I just, you know, someone's car getting shot at, you know, as this guy's going missing and stuff. Like, what happened, you know? Was he fighting something? Why'd he leave his dogs behind? You know?
Did he shoot up in the sky for a warning? Or was he shooting, you know, the fucking Gundam Mark II?
Because his wife was like, that's why he brings the dogs. In case there's something, you know? They'll smell it. They'll bark. They'll fucking...
Yeah.
So it must have been fucking wild that he left the dogs behind.
So this kind of reminds me of this story that I believe was filed under Missing 411 that Mr. Ballin talked about with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not Missing 411 because she was found. But here's the thing. So she had a similar issue. She was an older woman. I forgot where exactly it was. And, you know, I will look it up. And if we bring it up again, I can solidify whether or not. But I'm kind of just pulling from memory. But essentially what it was is it was this woman. She was older, maybe like in her 60s. But she was healthy and like fully cognizant. She had no type of like neurological disorder, like no dementia, no Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And she was outdoorsy, like a ranger. She grew up being a park ranger. That was her job. And then she had retired.
Yeah.
And so she lived in the woods that she was a ranger in. So she retired in that area. So she knew everything around there. And kids would come up to her like farm, like kind of like house area during the summer and spring. She would lead tours throughout the forest and stuff like that. Well, one day, her grandkids go to visit. And they're all there. And she's like, oh, I'm going to go get something from the back.
Mm-hmm.
So she leaves and she never comes back. So they freak out and... I think it was like she had like a backpack in the like her little ruck bag that she kind of kept outdoors in case she had to ever go out.
Mm-hmm.
That was missing. So they're like, well, something must have happened. Why did she go in? She doesn't have her phone. She doesn't have anything. And so kind of the same thing happened with what you were saying is like they found parts of like her equipment scattered miles.
Yep.
Like huge spots.
Yep.
And then here's the thing. I think it was they found her later. She was wandering, disoriented. She had walked into someone's home.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, like, didn't remember who she was, where she was going. And slowly, after she was kind of there for a couple days, her memory came back. And she's like, I don't remember anything. She remember going out into the back, and I heard this noise. And then I just came to here. And they scanned her brain and all that. There was nothing. So something happened, but all of her stuff was... like scattered over miles. But here's the kicker. The dogs couldn't pick up any trace. And something that was wacky is that on a second sweep, they found something new in an area they had already looked in.
Yeah.
They found something new there.
Yep.
So when they interview her, she's like, I don't remember anything. She's like, I can't tell you what happened. She's like, I went outside to get something from the back, whatever it was she was getting, maybe like something from like a shed or something. She's like, and like 4 days later, she came to not having any idea who she was or where she was going.
That sucks. I kind of have that fear that one day I'll have like a bad dream nightmare and I'll wake up and just my brain will reset. Just forget about who I am.
I think that's part of what makes Missing 411 so creepy is that very seldom does anyone like spitball about, oh, you know, what it could be, you know. He never breaks it down to something as mundane as Bigfoot or the Mothman. It's just completely up to you to try and picture what happens to those people when they're fucking absolutely alone out there, you know?
Yeah, I've sort of felt the opposite of that from, you know, cheesy, schlocky documentaries that really just want to push that one answer super hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing for this guy to just lay it all out and sort of make you sit there uncomfortably and be like, oh, what was it?
He doesn't push you to think one way or the other, you know?
It's tasteful.
Yeah. Yeah. He just tastefully presents some fucking cracked out information, you know?
And then you got to live with it. Like he gives you one eye droplet of sanity, of insight, and then he makes you live with
it. There's jumping off points, right? There are points in Missing 411 where you have to choose to believe something is out there. But there is enough of Missing 411 that is hard fact that it's fucking terrifying. Probably because, like, you know, camping's one of those things I like to do. I could very easily end up in a Missing 411 situation one day.
I wouldn't let you, bro. I'll be there.
Not while I'm on watch.
It could try.
But yeah, you know, that's Missing 411. If you're watching this from the woods, if you live in a wooded area, sorry. Go to sleep. Who's next?
I'll go next. So this is for all you Welsh speakers out there. No, I'm just kidding. It's nothing to do with Wales. All right, check the chat, boys.
A horrible armadillo lion.
That's the dingonek.
That's not its name. Come on, man.
That's what it's called. It's called the dingo neck.
Dingo neck?
Dingo
the neck. Neck of a dingo?
The neck of a dingo.
Oh, okay.
Understood.
I wanted to, I was listening back to some of our older episodes. Mm-hmm. Because I got that nostalgia kick. And so, of course, I go back to my greatest work, the Serpo part.
This is very Serpopartic.
Well, this is why. This is an African cryptid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's called. It's called the dingo gek. And essentially what it's described as, they call it the African walrus. This has been cited three different times by three different people. Not any time recently, but it's been recorded several different times in several different books. And it's not the same group of people.
Okay.
So essentially...
So this is like an artist's interpretation right here.
Yes, that is an artist's interpretation. Okay. I'm about to drop the real picture right now. No, I'm just kidding.
the real picture?
I just took it.
I'm here right now.
I'm here petting the dingo neck.
He's my friend, but also my enemy.
He kind of looks like, you know, the sci-fi original Anaconda.
Yeah.
Villains. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it does look like that. I love those. So let me, I'll run it down for you. This creature is described as a long, fanged aquatic animal covered in scale-like plates, or in plate-like scales. So essentially, unshootable.
Yeah, I like his pangolin armor. He looks kind of
That's what
bad.
I like, right?
Yeah. Is that a horn coming out, or?
Yeah, he has a, like, they, Sheesh. Some people said that, like, one of the different reports said that they saw a horn. Two of them said that there was no horn. People are like, oh, maybe it's, like, a difference between a male and a female, or a different species of them. Mm-hmm. But the reason why these are so hard to find, like, it's been regarded as one of the hardest cryptids to find, like, every other cryptid.
Yeah.
But it's because they exist in, like, supposedly, out by, like, Lake Victoria. In these, like, very, like, remote areas in Africa, like, down rivers, like, deep into the jungles of Africa, that's where these things are said to dwell. And there's not a lot of research done there for many reasons, you know? So this kind of falls back, like, some of, like, the neo-dinosaur cryptids that we hear about, like, in South and Central America, where essentially you're hearing the secondhand accounts of tribesmen, but... these sightings go back hundreds of years and then are as recent as that week. So like the first sighting was, he was an English adventurer. I'm going to say colonizer, John Alfred Jordan.
Get his ass.
Okay. I call it like I see it. So essentially he was there part of like a big game hunting party, and he was there, I believe it was 1907. So it was seen near Lake Victoria in 1907 by John Alfred Jordan. And this was him and his hunting party saw it. And then in 1910, another big game hunter, Edgar Beecher Bronson, also said that when he was there, he encountered one of these creatures, but he was farther in to these jungles than the other guy. So this got so widespread that in 1913, the East African Natural History Society, I just call that, you know, colonizer news. They, back then, they essentially said, hey, there's this thing out there. There's this, like, this mythical creature in the jungles of Africa. Because back then, you know, that they very much, how do you say, like, fantasticalized Africa. It was, like, this untamed, unproven area. Exactly. So if there were going to be dinosaurs, they'd be in Africa because it was such a savage land. That's how especially the British viewed Africa back then. It was like the spot where adventurers and explorers, like back in the day, being an explorer was a real job, you know, because they would do this. So it wasn't only him, but they would encounter tribesmen in the area and they would say, no, this is real. This is real. This is real. We encounter it. We can't kill it. We don't hunt them. Because literally it's like a walking suit of armor, you know? So nowadays people think that maybe it's like some giant, some massive prehistoric saurian that has somehow adapted to live in the no longer carbon rich? Was it, are we carbon rich or not carbon rich? Like, what was the difference in the atmosphere back then? There was a lot of carbon in the air, right?
It was a high oxygen
content. High oxygen content that somehow adapted to this lower oxygen content that we have now. And they're thinking it's because, let's double it back to the Serpopod. The Serpopod was said to exist in these massive underground cave systems.
Uh-huh.
They're thinking that these creatures are these prehistoric entities that existed back when dinosaurs were walking around. And it's no surprise that these ancient creatures are cited or have their roots in cave systems or near waterways far away from mankind. Yes, it makes it very easy to say, oh, well, we never found it. It was in the bowels of the jungle or in the depths of a cave.
Right.
It makes it rather convenient. But if we're going to look at this from a, you know, a cryptid enthusiast standpoint,
mm-hmm.
it's because these areas are hard to reach. How else? Because humans will kill anything that we see.
Oh, yeah.
So this is how they survive. They're living in these almost impregnable areas in the world. And so, like, that's why it kind of makes sense. Like, okay, is there, like, some massive waterway, some subterranean waterway where quite literally, like, it's not hollow earth, but it's, like, there's enough of an ecosystem from back then that these creatures can sally forth from the depths of the earth through waterways and cave systems
right.
to go exist for a bit out here and right. then go back down there to how it used to be for them?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I forgot to bring it up, but they bring that up in the UFO connection.
Hmm.
They overlay it, and there's a huge, you know how they overlaid the caves?
Yeah.
Well, there's an overlay they made for an underground watershed and UFO sightings.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it kind of poses that maybe these UFOs are able to somehow slip into the watershed underground and just never be detected. You know?
Oh, see, I don't fuck with water.
I can't trust an aquifer. Not at all. Yeah.
Nope. I don't.
Who knows what's in there?
Ever since the water temple in Ocarina of Time, I don't trust nothing.
No. None wet.
Yeah, Subnautica from what I understand, it's just a pocket of water. Yeah. It probably mm-hmm. looks like the fucking the Gungan city from Phantom Menace in there.
I wouldn't doubt it, bro. They said it was like 8 to 9 feet tall. Like, it only showed up during high tide when these cave rivers would meet with land rivers, so it's able to cross back and forth.
Mm.
But this was, you know, very long time ago. They didn't have cameras like we have back then. So there's also the case that it could have been a mistaken identity. So some people think it could have been like, have you guys seen that armored, like the large anteater armadillo looking thing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah.
The pangolin, the giant pangolin.
We love that guy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when I saw this picture, I was like, oh, that looks like that. So like I was saying, the British like to fantasticalize Africa. This could have just been these three guys being like, I want to make a name for myself. Yeah, yeah, we all saw it. Even though they didn't know each other, you can piggyback off each other and eventually become famous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it worked.
Exactly. Maybe they just saw one of these things and they're like, oh, dude.
Oh,
like,
dude.
Dude, dingo neck. Like,
just turns into a fish story.
Exactly. Literally. Just turns into, like, it could be anything, you know? Like, they're just making it up. You know, like, for all we know, these guys could have been sitting on a fucking log or in there, you know, like, or sitting on...
On a fucking
or log. You know, just, like, sitting there, like, eating, like, out of their MRE, and they saw one of these dudes just, like, walk by, eat an ant, and walk away. He's like, that'd be cool if it had tusks.
What if that thing had tusks and tried to kill what us? Get to... And we told exactly. everybody so the girls would sleep with us.
It, literally, that's what those dudes did back then, bro. That's a colonizer mindset. But here's the thing with that, is that locals brought it up, and locals even said, we can't kill it. Well, we can kill a giant pangolin. It's not very dangerous. It's not made of armor. And I tend to kind of err on the side of what the indigenous people say.
Well, so the locals, the natives, they were pretty much just like, yeah, but I mean, it don't bother us. Who cares? Are you saying that is their attitude towards it?
Exactly. Like, you know, like, they're just like, we don't mess with it. It can kill us. So clearly it's killed them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it comes up like with all cryptids. What could it have been? More likely, maybe mm-hmm. a case of mistaken identity. They said it was scaled. Could it have been an alligator with extra long canines? You know, who knows what it was?
It was definitely a tiger serpent. with a horn.
The cerebral part's brother, bro. That's what I like to believe. I like to believe it was the dingo neck. Because it kind of looks like one of the creatures from Fallout. You know, like the little, like...
It looks pretty cool.
The, like, viper dogs. That's what it looks like.
I'm down here picking through the Wikipedia article about the dingo neck. And
what does he tell you?
Down here, it says that Bronson was talking to another guy from the area, ex-collector James Martin, who, and apparently this guy said a great water serpent was seen on the north shore of the lake, which was worshipped by the natives, who believed its coming a harbinger of heavy crops and a large increase of their flocks and herds.
We love the dingo neck.
So, you know, it's also a god.
Yeah, it's also a god, just like the serpent part.
It's true, man.
It being a harbinger for, like, rainfall and crops makes me think about the idea of rising water, like, connecting lakes yeah. and connecting rivers so that it can travel across. I'm going to show you this picture of, like, the valley that Lake Victoria is in and how it forms this, like, crest of connected lakes and rivers.
Oh.
So, like, imagine a particularly rainy season, all these species of, you know, fish, insects, amphibians, all mixing together in a, like, a high season.
Yeah.
Who knows what could happen? Who knows what slurpy, slithery little guy gets in?
I'm just out of curiosity. I'm going to look up what the Lake Victoria watershed looks like. Oh, huh. Wouldn't you know? They almost all connect underground.
Oh no.
That sure is a crazy coincidence, huh?
All right, MTR, you know where we're going this summer.
You're not catching my ass in an aquifer.
I won't get within like 4 blocks of Lake Michigan.
Who knows what's in Lake Michigan?
Yeah, bro. Imagine. Who knows what's in there? Only they know.
And they're not going to tell us. I think there's much to be dug in and explored for African cryptids, because I feel like Africa and Central and South America are two of the only places in the world other than like Siberia. But what the fuck lives in Siberia?
Right.
Where like these things can live. So I might dig down this hole. Maybe next time we record, I'll have a couple more to throw your way.
What is in the water?
Yeah, I don't want to know.
But you must.
That's the dingo neck. It's my cryptid.
How good. How fun.
All right, Christian.
Well, yeah, looks like it's my turn. Last time, we had a little talk about the Shams al-Ma'arif, that is the Son of Knowledge. It is this esoteric sort of mystical text related to the Islamic faith, and it got me in the mood to dig a little bit deeper in that area. So I wanted to present to y'all a little showcase and examination on gin.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay.
I like mine most with lemonade, but you can mix it with a wide variety.
Get out of here. I hate you.
So the first question I have for y'all is, how has living in the aughts of America and being exposed to some very aggressive Islamophobia made you interact with like Islamic things in your life and your interests?
I've gone out of my way, because of the rampant Islamophobia in the United States after 9/11, to learn more about Islam and the people who follow it and the culture behind it, because fuck the United States and their Islam and xenophobia.
That's pretty much exactly where I'm at. Like, it's made me be like, okay, so what's going on over there? You know, 24% of the world identifies as Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be, like, a well-rounded person on this earth, it feels like something you should probably know a little bit about.
That's what I'm saying. You know, and as we're recording this, you know, how my friend's having a good Ramadan?
Absolutely. We were going to record this on the first day of Ramadan, but we kind of...
But we suck.
We missed the mark a little bit.
Not... So, didn't really have any like any interaction with Islam, pretty much like I knew what it was, you know, but it wasn't it wasn't in my life until maybe about like high school was when I actually started, you know, seeing Muslim people around and stuff. And that's when it was like, that's when I was like, oh, wow, there's people that hate these people for no fucking reason. Okay. You know, like it never even got close to getting a hold of me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we went to the same high school. Do you recall the, like, propaganda videos they would make us watch at the auditorium every 9/11?
Yeah, that was uncomfortable.
Like, 45-minute, like, propaganda, hoorah, look how horrible it was, and now we've got to fucking enlist bullshit?
Yeah, it was wild. Mm. It wasn't even that. They just straight up played footage. They just straight up played 9/11 death footage.
They would show, like, leapers.
They were like, yeah. One day I showed up for school and they were like, yo, we're watching 9/11 live leak.
Straight at up
school,
every year.
Dog. At school. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you showing this to me? My frontal fucking lobe isn't developed.
So in defiance of that, just like you, Ryan, I've made it like a concerted effort to get to know more about this culture, about this religion, and the sort of derivatives of
nowadays
it.
It's all alhamdulillah, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So this particular subject, the jinn, is one of the things that may have invested itself in our Western culture and maybe have been sanitized a little bit. Everybody loves Robin Williams' genie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to give it the more nuanced dig. The first thing I want to give on the topic is genie, our Western English version of the word, way less cool than jinn.
For sure.
I agree.
And this was a pretty wild research week for me. Like, there's a complete chapter in the Quran dedicated to the jinn.
That's badass. Bible, catch up, take notes.
Yeah, it's like how you were talking about last episode, the sweet parts of the religion that they sort of gave away
when they got
into like modern. Fuck that.
Jinn is still here. Yes, dude.
We never left them.
Fuck yes.
Like, the jinn are another entity in the Islamic world, and just like people, they can be faithful. They can pray to God, or they can be non-believers. They can be like atheistic jinn.
Damn.
And the Quran says, don't worship them. You know, they're spirits who are adjacent to us. They have some level of like respect to them.
They're not below you, you know, they're not like your tool to use. Okay, I like that, you know, be respectful of the jinn.
And in the Catholic perversion of like local pagan beliefs, how you would find like the local spirit,
mm-hmm.
and they go, oh yeah, no, he's a saint now, he loves Jesus.
Yeah.
They were doing that too. They were totally like, oh yeah, your pagan god, he's a jinn now.
Badass.
Welcome to the pantheon.
He's a jinn and he loves Allah. So
yeah, and he converted. So
well, your jinn.
Be like your jinn.
You know, I feel like that's a lot. It's a lot nicer of a way to do it than like give me the idol of your god so I can break it in front of you.
No, they're like, now he's also fasting for Ramadan.
St. Patrick fasting for Ramadan?
That's interesting.
St. Patrick could never. That motherfucker. There's this interesting story in the Quran where the prophet went to talk to a bunch of them and like try to convert them.
Mm-hmm.
And he told one of his followers, like, I might get the story wrong, but this is my vague understanding of it. He's like, listen, you're going to hear some weird stuff. You're going to see some weird stuff. I'm going to be talking to the jinn. Just be cool and I'll be back.
Sure, yes, sir.
Like, yeah. Yeah, we believe that shit rocks. Alhamdulillah.
That's fucking cool. That's funny.
There's like a wide variety of named jinn. There are family trees, like he begot him, begot him.
Oh,
like your
okay.
grandfather jinn.
That's badass.
Like, I read this whole long lineage of them. One particular one came from our book, The Picatrix.
Fuck yes.
Gave name to the seven jinn kings, excuse
okay.
me.
Okay.
Four of which are archdemons, like high-ranking super
jinn. Fuck yes.
of New Londo.
And like getting into like the crunchy cosmology of all the djinn was very fun. Like these seven super djinn are each associated with like a planetary body and a day of the week.
That's sick as fuck.
Like Al-Amar the Red King is associated with Mars and Tuesday, and if you're possessed by one of his guys, it's going to attack you in a very specific part of your body. I mean, the finding out which is hard scripture and which is, you know, this pseudo religious adaptation is sometimes hard, especially now. Like you'll just read on Djinn Wiki this information and I don't know the source of it.
Yeah.
Not the Djinn Wiki.
Not that I'd expect
I'm up on the Djinn Wiki.
Just an interesting thing.
But there are a couple of like specific, you know, like I mean there's a whole chapter. So there is some like certified knowledge that is integral to the faith. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't read the fucking Bible in a minute, but I don't think there's a full chapter that goes on like the demon countdown.
Oh God, no. No, fuck no.
No, it's actually kind of funny. It's funny that you forget that you haven't read the Bible and that like how they've taken so many things
don't
out of
it. Don't tell my grandmother.
You're done.
Christians gam gam. I'm just kidding. My God. I have a friend of mine, her name's Erin, and she is she's very into like, you know, celestial bodies and like she's very into like astrology and stuff like that, but she is very big on Christianity because she believes that there's very good teachings in it. Here's her kicker, and I believe this too. She's like, and she said it really well, she's like, the hands of man have had too much say in what's in the Bible.
Yeah.
She's like, it's been translated 5 times. She's like, so she read the Bible because she wanted to learn the teachings and like what God was really saying. She learned it. I think she either, I'll ask her after this. Either it was, she learned to read ancient Hebrew or ancient Aramaic.
Yeah, take it from the source.
To read exactly what was said. And she's like, there are some things in that language that cannot even be translated to English. So I wouldn't doubt, and it really makes me want to go and read like what the ancient Hebrew or ancient Aramaic said.
For sure.
To see what they said about the spiritual realm. Because, you know, the standard version of the Bible now is NIV, the New English, the New International Version, whatever it is. That is so watered down. Like, it's like there's so many cool little nuggets that you get when they talk about, like, seraphim and nephilim. And
yeah,
in the book,
dude,
of Revelations,
the powers,
they say there
bro.
Were 12 or 24 elders, and they all bowed before the Lord. And there were these entities that were there made of fire. Like, they don't even give them a name in our translation. I want to see if they gave these dudes names. Like, these guys sound like Digimon. Like, I want to see what these dudes are. I just thought it was, you know, that's just a little tangent. But I just thought it was cool that you brought that up. Like, how they take out all the good stuff and the stuff that kind of makes you think. So
Ryan,
it's easier to
I would
ingest.
Love to let you know, buddy, that the Apocryphon of John is translated to English.
I'm going to have to pick that up next time I
hit
up
the bars. If you wanted to check out one of them, you know. The Apocryphon
Absolutely.
Of John is, and it's the best one. Talks about Yaldabaoth. Just saying.
I'm going to check it out. No, I'm going to absolutely read it.
But, like, there's a whole bunch of shit that I didn't even know was from Apocryphon or from Gnosticism. Like, King Solomon, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's got a whole fucking lore around him that is exclusively in Apocryphon. The Harrowing of Hell? A canon event in Catholic doctrine not mentioned anywhere in the Bible.
Yeah, my down-home priest ain't going to talk to me about that.
Yeah,
They're going to bring up the cool stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that makes you want to follow the faith.
Hey, hold on. It's Ramadan, gentlemen. Let's get back to the religion we're really here to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
My apologies. So, another interesting conversation, let's call it, because all of these Abrahamic religions were like frothed up and bubbled from the same region and source material. You know, I'm gonna butcher this Bible story, the occurrence in which the apostles were, well, what the fuck were they doing, dude? They were discussing Jesus maybe after he was crucified,
mm-hmm.
and like the flame came up above their heads, and that's how they knew God was with them. You know that story?
So essentially what that was is it was after Jesus had died, or was crucified, and they were in the temple, and they were essentially like trying to figure out what was going to happen to the church now, because they believed that Jesus was going to lead the new church. Well, he died.
Mm-hmm.
No, this wasn't after he died. This was after his ascension, I believe. So So what happened is, like, after Jesus was crucified, he came back to life and he walked among the disciples for however many days. And then they all met him on a hill, like, to, like, essentially he's like, we're going to say goodbye. They're like, what do you mean you're back? And then a cloud came and literally took Jesus into heaven. After that, they all were discussing what's going to go on with the church, and they didn't really know, because they wanted to spread God's word throughout the whole world. And they're like, there's so many different languages. How will we speak them? And essentially what happened is Pentecost is what it's called. It said that the Spirit of the Lord swept into
the Pentecostal fire. Exactly. Yes.
The Spirit of the Lord swept into the temple, and there was a great, like, shaking, and tongues of fire appeared above the apostles' heads, and they were able to speak in every language in the world. And that was like God's way of saying, this is how you will continue without Jesus physically being there. This is how you will reach the masses.
Mm-hmm. Damn. Okay, so thank you, one Bible study, Ryan.
Yeah, holy shit, I did not expect you to come faith. In with that, Ryan. That's fucking cool as shit.
That particular story connects perfectly with the sort of jinn that I wanted to focus on, and that is that they are considered to be smokeless living flames.
Oh.
Right? Like, they're meant to be constructed of these flames, and the jinn under Alaman, the Red King, are targeting your head in a possession, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the associated body part that will be influenced if these jinn talk to you. So they felt to me as I was reading this that these ifrit flame jinn who attack your head and make you, like, act in a possessed way melds almost perfectly with the Pentecostal fire story. And I just found it interesting, like, just as I was scrolling through the stories, that was the one that instantly came to mind. There's so many, like, named jinn that have, like, just a hair away from, like, a demon that ends up in biblical stories. Tell me if you heard this shit before. There's this type of jinn called a shaitan.
Uh-huh.
Shaitan.
Ah, that sounds awfully similar.
Maybe they were all cooking the same thing out there. Now, the original etymological term...
Oh, Satan. Okay. Sorry.
He just got...
His ass got there. Don't worry.
Said, oh, shit, Satan.
The original etymological origin for jinn is more like the hidden thing. The thing that it cannot be seen. Mm-hmm. The thing that is outside of view. So it wasn't really originally this specific, like, creature or entity that follows a specific set of rules. It was just the all-encompassing other. You know what I'm saying?
Holy fuck. The Jin Wiki's got invocations on here and shit. Real
don't
fucking
do the invocations,
bro.
Don't you read that shit.
Don't read the invocations from Jin Wiki.
Nah,
don't
bro,
do
we talking. Red King is guesting on this shit tonight.
I'm not really... Well, mostly because I can't.
Oh, shit. He posted it.
The seven Jin Kings. Who's the strongest?
Me.
Damn, dude. There it is right here.
Is it
Ryan,
you?
His day is Saturday.
That's right. And on the Saturdays for the boys. We're here to play around with that. Crack open a cold one. I'm getting into, like heretical territory. I'm not going to say anything.
I'm seeing here that they each have an associated angel.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, what's that about? Like, they got a boss they got to report to, or, like, keeping tabs, or...
I don't fucking know what's up with the angels. I know, for example, one of the jinn was there when they made Adam in the Islamic faith.
Interesting.
And that... So, it's a really silly story. So, the angels are mixing up the earth and the clay that's going to become Adam, right? Mm-hmm. And one jinn is watching with jealousy, and he spits on that mud.
And ruins.
I see.
And that creates Adam's belly button.
Ah. Because
there was, like, a spit in the clay, that from a djinn, and also that clay made dogs. So like a certain angel will not enter a room with a dog in it because that has like djinn influence associated with it.
Wait, like a dog? It made dogs?
Made puppers.
Hmm. That's why I hate dogs. That's why I hate them, bro.
Because you're an angel?
Yeah. No, this is djinn hours.
So it says here Al-Abyad is monitored by Gabriel.
Yeah, what is that? Like, do they each have a parole officer?
That's what it sounds like. It's that they have a parole officer.
That's kind of sick.
You know? They all got one.
It kind of makes me, like, appreciate, and I use that term, I use that word lightly, like how Supernatural kind of, like the show Supernatural approached djinns and angels, where, like, angels were kind of, like, the superior, like, they were a step below God. They were these angelic creatures that... They, like, cause I remember there was a moment in Supernatural where, like, a bunch of djinns were like, yeah, well, we're going to beat your ass, Gabriel. And Gabriel's like, yeah, okay. And he just, like, pummeled them. It kind of makes me think about, like, appreciate that.
Gabriel's just a boy on screen in Supernatural.
Oh, yeah.
He was. He just was like this, like, so in Supernatural, Gabriel is actually Loki.
Jesus fucking.
Oh,
what the fuck?
I mean, if you got to write 24 seasons of that shit, I would be doing shit like that, too.
That's wild.
I'd just be mixing and matching. Yo. I'd be like, yeah, you know you know Ezekiel? Yeah, he's Confucius.
Oh, that guy? Yeah, he's this Confucius. Guy. Avengers style.
I only watched 2 episodes of Supernatural. The first episode, and then the one when, like, the heaven fall happened, where they wrought all the angels from God's grasp, and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, that was a cool episode. I'd love to see them do something like that, and they gave Islam, the Islamic faith, like, the respect, I guess, that it deserves in a show like that, where it's like, you're seeing, like, followers of Allah, like, banishing evil demons and stuff like that, like... I'm getting sick and tired of seeing it like, oh boy, he's doing the Lord's Prayer and casting Satan back. It's like, now I want to see a dude pull up and like say stuff from the Quran and send some like creature back to hell or something like that.
No, dude, you fight a djinn the old way, dog. They are weak to iron.
Yo, you pull out the iron broadsword.
You hit him. You fucking grab him back.
Yo, me and Christian were fighting Islamophobia before it was cool, all right? We tried to rebrand H.P. Lovecraft's story of the Mad Arab to the Mad Magi and make him a superhero.
We were making it cool.
We were making him cool, bro. He was out there fucking invoking and incanting, bro.
Popular association with djinn. I did read a lot of older folk who mm-hmm. don't have a, let's say, as woke association with mental health.
Ah.
You can see where this is going, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Same way with Christensen being possessed. Yeah.
A certain, I believe it's Morocco, mm-hmm. has the highest rate of djinn belief in its contemporary culture. It was something like 65, I want to say, percent of people think like djinn can still influence you.
Really?
In your day-to-day life.
I thought you were going to be like, thought you were about to give me a way funnier statistic of like, Morocco has the most djinn attacks.
That's what I thought he was about to say. If you go to Morocco, there's like a 70% chance you can get smoked by a djinn in the streets.
if you take it, you know, by...
But I guess,
if
you know,
is something
yeah.
like it's powerful belief, that's still true.
It might also be true, man.
You ain't lying.
No, I want to go to Morocco so bad. It's so cool.
Al-Abyad's going to get you, man.
Yeah, him too, and him.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude, Mamoun's going to get you.
You're out here just dropping names like...
I'm on the
names
wiki.
Don't have power, bro.
Yeah, their asses are coming for you.
Yeah, let it be known to everybody. Christian we'll and say, I haven't said the names.
I will say every djinn, except not the guy whose day is Wednesday, because that's when we're recording.
Fuck.
Can't give me it. Can't
oh,
give
you
me
can't
if
say
it's
them
not your
on
day,
their
bro.
Day.
Oh, wait, is it the opposite? I can only say them on their day?
I don't know the rules.
Fuck.
Hey, what does djinn wiki say, Dan?
I don't know.
You're
dude.
Rolling with a loaded gun that I can't help you
I don't
with.
Know,
exactly.
Dude.
Christian and I wash our hands of this, but if anything does bleed out, I got my fucking iron brass knuckles.
You give me 20 minutes, there's about to be 8 djinn kings.
No, please.
No, this is all what it's about, bro. We're having fun on Wednesday Djinn Day.
Any of the any of the djinn appear as giant wheels with a thousand eyes on them?
No, they're all just like dudes. They all look really good.
Yeah, I was looking at them. They look cool.
They're just like silly boys. They wear sashes and like have cool swords.
Yeah, that's the red one looked cool. Fucking
yeah,
Alamar, dude.
There's all kinds of fun to be had with the djinn. I just wanted to spend a little bit of time, like, kind of just laughing at them because they're fun, cool guys.
No, they're badass for sure. These guys are sick.
And to, like, approach them in a sense like you would a cool, like, demon rundown. Like, we could say, oh, isn't this guy cool? Isn't this guy silly and weird?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be this archaic or this, like, far away thing that nobody's ever heard of. If you fuck with Beelzebub, you know, what's that dude's name? The fly guy?
Ramtha? No, yeah. Beelzebub is the fly guy. Beelzebub means Lord of Flies.
Yeah, Beelzebub, you can fuck with him, and you can fuck with Alamar. Like, we put them all together. All boys are on the table here on this show.
Fuck yeah, dude. We're basically building up to the Abrahamic endgame, you know?
The Abrahamic?
Fucking yeah, Captain I want all Islam them boys right in. Right next to Iron Christian. It's gonna be badass, dude.
They're gonna fight a golem.
They're gonna fight Yaldabaoth, dude.
A Jewish golem.
So I would love to have a great ender, like a good thematic button for this segment, but I don't. That's all we got.
And that's what you get here on Mad Tower Radio. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Hit the like button, hit the follow button, or subscribe, whatever you're listening to us on. You know, give us that interaction, those clicks, you know? That's what we need. Give us more of those clicks, and we'll give you more episodes. So, expect another one in the near future. It'll be this calendar year. That's all I can promise you for now. And, well, this has been Mad Tower Radio, ending transmission.
A frequency beyond space and time.
Unspeakable knowledge. It is Mad Tower Radio.